Hi, everyone, and welcome to Two of the First for September 19th, 2022. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Great to have you with us. We are presented by French Lick Resort. Got two stories for you today. Kind of falling off a little bit of the mantra of the program, just because we have kind of two stories in one story, and then one story unto itself. But we'll start with the kind of two stories that are considered one story for the purposes of this program. And those two stories are the two finishes on the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour over the weekend. Really fascinating to see kind of how it all comes down to just a break here and there. Just something that maybe should seem normally routine and didn't turn out to be routine. Something that you maybe take for granted at a professional tournament that maybe you shouldn't have. So let's start with the DS Automobiles Italian Open. Winds up in a playoff at Marco Simone Golf Club. It's going to be the host of next year's Ryder Cup. You've got Robert McIntyre, Lefty Scott, who's won once on the tour, kind of been lost for really the last, I'll say, 9 months. I mean, he really had not shown up much on leaderboards in the DP World Tour. And he goes up against Matt Fitzpatrick, reigning U.S. Open champion, a guy you expect to be a big part of the next Ryder Cup, a guy you expect going to be one of the leaders of the tour from that perspective, even though obviously he's not playing there week to week anymore. He's playing the PGA Tour most weeks. But to compete in this event, and he's going to compete more next year because he's going to have to earn enough starts to qualify for the Ryder Cup, even though he's going to obviously be on the team on world ranking points. And so they wind up in a playoff. Rory McIlroy finishes fourth by himself. Victor Perez finishes just ahead of him. Victor Perez could very well be a Ryder Cup player. But you get McIlroy, who is in it well deep into the tournament, hasn't finished down to the top 20 in feels like forever. And you've got these two guys get together in a playoff. First hole of the playoff is a par 5, the 18th at Marco Simone. And in his backswing or during his swing, some kind of camera noise, I assume is a shutter, bothered Fitzpatrick. And he pulls his drive way left, I mean massively left of the target. McIntyre didn't have that problem. He finds the fairway. At least Fitzpatrick was able to find the ball and play it and get reasonably down toward the green, down toward the putting surface, and gives himself a chance. And then tries to get up and down. He's got to make birdie because McIntyre hits his second shot. It looked like it was a rescue, maybe like a hybrid, four hybrid, something like that, three hybrid. Gets to the back of the green, pin high, to the right, maybe 50, 60 feet of the flag. Looked like maybe had to consider a chip, depending on where it landed. Fitzpatrick's well to the right of that. He's got nothing but downslope all the way to the hole. Tries to get up and down, doesn't. And McIntyre, to his credit, takes a delicate-looking shot, makes it look really easy, makes the birdie, locks up his win. And all of a sudden, Robert McIntyre is now back in the spotlight. People have thought about, you know, maybe this guy could be a really interesting match play guy for future Ryder Cups. I think that thought was given going into what would have been the 2020 Ryder Cup. Obviously, that didn't wind up happening. But now I think you've got to have him on your radar. I mean, it's just the reality. The guy won against two of the biggest players that compete on the DP World Tour, even if irregularly. Throw in Victor Hovland because he was there as part of it, and now you've got something here. Robert McIntyre is suddenly up from 110th in the world ranking. He's now 68th, and he had started the year 55th and moved all the way up, all the way down to 110. Now is back pretty close, although definitely not close enough yet to get inside of the top 50 by year end and potentially earn a spot in the Masters based on his world ranking. It's pretty impressive. Really great finish, except for the fact that you had a camera shutter go off and you had Fitzpatrick's playoff effectively dashed right away because I'm sure that he knew he was going to kind of need a miracle to happen for McIntyre to mess up a perfect drive right in the middle of the fairway to a downhill target, and he didn't. I mean, he's a professional for crying out loud. So really fascinating, captivating finish on the DP World Tour. And then hours and hours later, you've got on the west coast of the United States, the Fortinet Championship, which was supposed to be imperiled by rain. So they went off in threesomes. They went off earlier. They tried to get it done. They were going to set themselves up for basically a taped window of coverage on Golf Channel. And they had a really interesting finish. I mean, if you, again, I mean, most people don't pay attention to the fall series events, maybe at their peril, but this one actually turned out to be pretty interesting for a variety of reasons. But at the end, you had Max Homa and you had Danny Willett together. And Danny Willett was a shot up on Homa going to the final hole. Again, par five finisher, this time at Silverado Resort. And Willett gets on the green at three. He's, I think he hit it like a 65, 70 yard shot for his third shot to 4 feet. He's a two putt away from winning. And then you've got Homa, who's hitting his fourth shot just short of the green. It's kind of an interesting cut if you didn't get to watch the broadcast of it or a highlight of it. But the way they kind of cut that around the surround the 18th hole, they have like a little patch of rough just in kind of in between the fringe and then a patch of kind of chipping area before you go to some more rough. And so Homa's in this chipping area and he holes out. Crowd goes nuts. Homa gets the 16 under, post 68 for the day. But he had to figure at that point, it's completely in vain because Willett just has to two putt from 4 feet. Willett's been phenomenal the entire week inside of 10 feet, certainly inside of 5 feet. And then what does he do? He hits his first putt 8 feet, 6 inches, leaving 5 feet to the hole, basically. And then Willett misses the 5-footer to lose the tournament. Incredible stuff, completely unexpected. Homa is now a 5-time PGA Tour winner. He has won 3 times in the last basically year plus a couple days because he won this tournament last year somewhat unexpectedly. He won in our area here in the DC area for the Wells Fargo Championship in horrific conditions for his second win of this kind of year-long stretch and then repeats as champion. He's now a 5-time PGA Tour winner. He has 3 wins in the state of California, 2 in this tournament, 1 obviously in the Los Angeles area when he won Tiger's tournament at Riviera. I mean, it's just, he has transformed himself. Max Homa has transformed himself into one of the best players on the planet. He is now 16th in the official world golf ranking. If you had told me that 2 years ago, I'd have laughed at you. But he is now ranked ahead of Hideki Matsuyama, Cameron Young, Shane Lowry. Obviously, Dustin Johnson keeps falling, but Dustin Johnson, Tyrrell Hatton, Brooks Koepka, I mean, just guys he has passed in the last year, and it's been pretty remarkable to watch, and I think it's even more interesting considering he was a favorite going into this week. I mean, Hideki Matsuyama was kind of second in that 16-1 range. He was 10-1 to win at the start of the week, and that seemed awfully short for a guy who has typically won when he's kind of 40, 50, 60 to 1. And that obviously didn't turn out to be the case. This week, he was properly priced. He was the guy to win. And now he's, again, 16th in the world. Pretty incredible stuff. The one thing I thought that was really interesting in the aftermath of this is not necessarily what you heard from Max Homa. I mean, great for him to win. But I thought Danny Willett in defeat was particularly interesting. I mean, it's really hard to kind of take that and just deal with the loss. And he not only did that, but he spoke to the media eloquently. He was very gracious about it. He said he expected Max Homa to chip in on 18. And he puts this big smile on his face because of course that happened. I mean, anyone who's ever played a competitive sport or been a fan in competitive sport has that feeling of course this is going to happen. Of course that happened. And Willett was interesting. He said, I expected him to do it, but then it's still a bit of a shock when it happens. We all played really good today. Like I said, a bit of a shame to kind of finish how I did. But no, he's heading off to the President's Cup, and hopefully he plays well there too. Just a really nice nod to Max Homa, which I think pretty much everyone likes on the PGA Tour. I mean, he's just genuinely a good person from all accounts. Just a nice guy. He's not a guy that kind of rubs into your face, doesn't rub people the wrong way. And so it's kind of hard to be mad at him. But he did answer one question at the end, kind of about what he saw in the putts. And he said he thought it was straighter when it was coming back. And so he didn't take the line that he needed. He thought it was going to be pretty much a straight in the hole putt, and it kind of missed out. But the first putt, he saw a kind of different line from one of the other players in the group, and he saw his going left to right, and he hit it too hard through the break. And then he thought, okay, coming back, it's going to be a straight putt. And that obviously didn't turn out to be the case. Wound up missing left. And he said, disappointing way to finish, but you know, first out of the season, like I said, to be in contention, things are in a good place. We'll live to fight another day. And what else can you say? You could be livid. You could be sad. You could be truly upset. But for Danny Willett, who kind of got gifted PGA Tour status somewhat back because of the LIV guys leaving, now you've got some life. I mean, you don't obviously didn't win. You didn't get an exemption, but it feels like Danny Willett does. This is kind of who Danny Willett is. Every once in a while, just shows up, either wins a tournament or nearly wins a tournament, kind of saves himself, and then maybe tends to kind of go back off into the wilderness a little bit for a while. But maybe this is the change for Danny Willett. Maybe this is something to set him off on a good foot at the beginning of the year. And for Max Homa, I mean, this effectively guarantees him, at least historically speaking, a place in the Tour Championship. If you look at the guys who have won in the fall series since we've had this wraparound season for about 10 years, this is the final wraparound season, pretty much all of them, pretty much all of them get to the Tour Championship. And the players who tend to win the FedEx Cup tend to have a win in the fall. Think about Rory McIlroy, won the CJ Cup in the fall in Las Vegas, winds up winning the Tour Championship. It does kind of set into motion maybe an ease of mind. I'm not sure. We never really heard players talk about this a whole lot, but to a degree, an ease of mind that, hey, I already got points, got plenty of money, got a win on the year. Everything else is gravy. Let's go focus on doing bigger and better things, whether that's winning a major, contending in majors, whatever it is, earning more money, getting another win. And that's now what Max Homa has, and to a degree, I think Danny Willett has that too. Now he knows, barring some catastrophe, he's got tour status. That's fine. He's pretty much locked up for the year, just going to have to make some cuts here and there. And he can do that. He's still a very, very talented player and a former Masters champion. So a little rubber the green there. But for Willett, just an unfortunate situation to three-putt from nearly 5 feet, or nearly 4 feet, I mean. And shocks happen in this game. They truly happen. That's why every shot matters. That's why every shot counts. And that leads to what we got on Sunday in both of those tournaments. You just never know what's going to happen. And I thought that made it pretty interesting. A couple of tournament results. I know Andrea Lee won her first LPGA Tour title. Just another shootout Sunday on the LPGA up in Portland. Just like Allie Ewing last week, she shot 66 in the final round, prevails by one shot over what turned out to be a crowded leaderboard. And then on the Champions Tour, Steve Stricker wins again. Stricker got into birdies the first playoff hole. He's now won that event twice. It's been really an interesting year, I think, on the Champions Tour. If you follow that tour, and I know a lot of people don't. They're like, why do we still have this tour? But if you look at three dominating players throughout the course of the season, I guess you could throw in Jerry Kelly, make it four. You got Steve Alker, Steve Stricker, Patrick Harrington, and to a degree, Jerry Kelly. And they've basically dominated the schedule. And you got Bernhard Langer with a win in there. You've got Darren Clark winning a major championship at the Senior Open. You've got other players who are playing well, but that's your tour this year. And I think that's kind of interesting. A little bit of a changing of the guard, maybe. It's hard for Langer now. I mean, he's 64 years old. He's not getting any longer. He's only getting shorter, and it's going to be more difficult for him to kind of keep up. And I think that puts into perspective what Hale Irwin accomplished, winning 47 times on the Champions Tour, that you really don't have that big of a window, and certainly not as big of a window as you do when you're in your early 20s and trying to compete on the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, all those kinds of things when you're younger. But that Langer's kind of reign over this tour lasted basically a dozen years, 13 years, is pretty incredible. And now it seems to have kind of transitioned to a group. I guess there's a big four right now, big three, big four right now on the Champions Tour. And if you had ever told me that Steve Alker was going to be one of those guys that was in the big four in the modern Champions Tour, I would have said one, who, and two, laughed at you. So again, never know what's going to happen in golf. Okay. Second story today is a little bit LIV related. And I just kind of have a couple of interesting takeaways from the week in, they call it Chicago, Sugar Grove, Illinois, Rich Harvest Farms. So Cameron Smith wins, and he obviously got his first live win. He plays first live event in the Boston area or Massachusetts, the quote Boston event in Bolton at the International. That was won by Dustin Johnson. He got his first win. Well, if you look at all of the events so far, I think LIV Golf is developing a problem. And I mean beyond the existing problems that people can have with it, and the people do have with it. But you have a clear dominating force on this tour, and it's Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson finished third in this event. Actually tied for second. But the LIV Golf leaderboard is also supremely messed up because they have Peter Uihlein, who finished T2, and Dustin Johnson as 2 and 3 instead of T2. I don't know how you run a professional golf tour and have that thing wrong on your website. You cannot explain that to me. I do not understand. But you have Dustin Johnson once again in the midst of it, competing well, and he's the best player on this tour. I mean, it's just clear he is the best player on this tour. If you look at the events that he has played so far, they've played four now. London, first event, call it what you will. Maybe the course didn't line up. Maybe he just wasn't feeling it. Who knows? Finishes eighth. And then you look at the next four events. So you've got, they haven't posted the, again, you're running a professional golf tour. Post the results. They haven't posted the results from Chicago yet. But in Portland, finishes fourth. Team wins the event. Bedminster, third, team wins the event. Boston wins, team wins the event. Chicago finishes third, team wins the event. They've won four in a row. So Pat Perez, by the way, has made an insane amount of money being the absolute worst player on his team, which is called the Four Aces. And we'll get to that in a second because I think there's some funny quotes about that after the fact and really puts into perspective how much Pat Perez sucks on the LIV Tour. But you've got this guy that dominates. You've got a Dustin Johnson who it just feels like, and I think Alan Shipnick said this, and from the limited amounts of LIV Golf that I've seen, I seem to agree. I think this format really works for Dustin Johnson. And it works for him because he has all the money in the world now. I mean, he has a ton of money. I'm pretty certain he has some kind of equity stake in LIV. And I don't mean just in the quote-unquote team franchise thing that he has. I mean, he has, I think, a legitimate equity stake in the league. And you put him in a 54-hole tournament where there's really not a ton of pressure, except at the end. There's really no traditional pressure of a golf tournament of, oh, well, you got to follow so and so, or you got to get in the house being in the last group, or whatever. I mean, I know they group the guys based on score after the two rounds, but at the end of the day, it's a relatively low stress atmosphere because he has a ton of money. If he earns anything on top of it, okay. We don't know his contract for sure, so we don't know if he's earning money on top of it, the signing bonus that he got, or whether he's earning against it. Either way, it doesn't matter. He's already got the money. And so this is a low stress thing for him. But that's a problem, I think, for LIV, because you're going to create a situation where you may have a guy in Dustin Johnson and perhaps in Cameron Smith as well, because Cameron Smith played well in the first event that he played in Massachusetts. You could be creating a situation where you have basically two good players, two players who compete week in and week out and have a chance, and everyone else is somewhat variable in terms of performance. And if that's the case, you've got your South Africans who continue to play well. Louis Oosthuizen and Charles Schwartzel finished tied for sixth in this tournament. But by and large, you're looking at Dustin Johnson and Cameron Smith as the tour's base. Joaquin Niemann played well, finished tied for fourth, and along with Sergio Garcia. But Garcia's been, some pretty much variable. Niemann's new. Bryson played okay. We'll get to his hilarious incident in a second. Phil Mickelson actually didn't embarrass himself for once, finished in a tie for eighth place. But other than that, you really just have two common names at the top of every leaderboard. On the PGA Tour, you go, oh, this is a great battle between these guys playing against the best in the world every week. It's just a great season. I can't wait to see him compete again. I don't know if people are going to feel that same way about Liv, because you only have the same, I mean, effectively now you're going to basically have the same 48 guys or most same 40-ish guys week to week for at least the next calendar year. And you've got those players and you know half of them don't really have a chance. I mean, the same guys keep showing up at the bottom of the leaderboard over and over and over and over again. Mark Leishman, dead last. Tied for dead last with Turk Pettit, Hud Swafford, Swan Kim, Sean Norris. I mean, great move. Obviously not very competitive. So if that's the perception of this tour, that you've got players who really just aren't up to the task of competing against the better players week to week, you almost kind of have a Champions Tour situation. You've got four players who matter. And you know those players who matter. And everyone else is just kind of there to be there, except for the occasional off week where maybe someone breaks through that's unexpected. But by and large, this is what it is. And that could be a problem. Because if you're an outsider and you're like, I might watch Liv, might be interested in watching it on the stream. And you know for a fact that it's really going to be those two guys in the end and maybe a couple of others that cycle in from week to week, but these guys are probably going to be 1 and 2, 2 and 3, you know, somewhere in the leaderboard. Are you going to be that compelled to watch the product? Or are you going to think of it as, okay, it's just the Cam Smith and DJ show, and they're just going to beat up on everybody, take on the money, and then just bank it all? And I'm starting to wonder about that. I don't obviously have audience data that tells me that one way or the other. This is really a pattern that's just starting to develop, right? I mean, Dustin Johnson's been in from the beginning. Cam Smith's new to it, two events in. But you can kind of see it developing. You kind of see it happening, potentially, where you've got the same team, four aces, continuing to win week after week, primarily because of Dustin Johnson. You've got Cam Smith, who's won one and been a part of one very closely. And if you don't kind of start to round this out with maybe a handful of players that can win week to week, I think it's going to turn people off. It's just not going to be seen as hyper-competitive because it's new, it's short fields, it's another thing to add and the things you might not like about it. That's just from a competitive standpoint before you even get into the funding piece of it. And you go, okay, well, it's 54 holes, it's a shotgun start, no one seems to care, there's techno music playing all the time, whether that bothers you or not. That could bother you. You've got the guys wearing shorts, so they don't seem to kind of be as professional about it. Again, another thing I don't care about, but could bother people. And oh, by the way, you only like two or three guys have a chance to win every time. And otherwise, it's just a giveaway to the people who show up and get beaten. And for the two or three guys who win everything, they're just getting paid a whole boatload of money and just to nuke everyone because they're way better than them. That could be a problem. But we'll see. We'll see as it develops. There is another event on Live coming in a few weeks' time in October. And then just a couple of events remaining in their season. Again, we'll see kind of how this builds up. But you've got Bangkok, Thailand next. You've got Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, where they host the Saudi International event. And then you've got Trump Doral for the season ender at the end of October. So still plenty of golf left, obviously, throughout the calendar year. But I just thought that was something interesting to bring to people's attention as maybe something starts to develop here. All right, went a little long today on 2 with the first. Apologize for that, but appreciate you listening to us. Giving us a 5-star review, if you can listen to us through a service that does that, would be greatly helpful. Very much appreciated. You can send your comments on the show to me on Twitter, at Ryan Ballingy. Follow Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net. And we'll talk to you tomorrow on 2 off the first.